Clippers to come in so that Westchester could take the field. And even now, a half hour before the first pitch, you just had to breathe the air around the Clippers bench to know how big this game was, how excited they all were, even as they all tried to act as if they were just getting ready for another game. Papi used to say that was the best of sports, just the air around a game like this, the excitement and the nervousness in your stomach, and the waiting for the umpire to say, "Play ball!" Mr. M gathered them around him now and told them what he told them before every playoff game. "There won't be an adult here tonight who wouldn't trade places with you in a heartbeat," he said. "And that includes me." Michael was in the back of the group. He looked across the field to the Westchester bench while their assistant coach hit ground balls to their infielders. On the other side of the fence, Justin warmed up, pitching to his dad. He was throwing hard now, and every once in a while, his father would point with his mitt, the way Papi used to, as if to say, "Now you're humming." Michael couldn't take his eyes off Justin. "The guy's the biggest jerk in the world," Michael thought. "And tonight, I'd give anything to be him." It was not the best of beginnings. Westchester got 3 runs off Anthony in the top of the first. Walk, single, home run by Justin. It was 3-0 just like that before all the Westchester parents, and there were a lot of them, had even filled the bleachers on their side of the field. "How many pitches did that take?" Mr. Minaya said. He was doing what he always did when he got nervous during a game, taking off his cap and rubbing his forehead with both hands, like he was rubbing up a baseball. 6, Michael said, looking down at his pitch chart. "That many, huh?" He put his cap back on, stood up, yelled, "Dime!" He looked back at Michael and said, "Meaning time for me to go out and lie to young Mr. Fierro a little bit." Mr. M stayed out there until the home plate umpire came out, and whatever he said must have worked, because Anthony got the Giants out 1-2-3 after that. But the damage was done. Michael ran out to coach third base. When he got there, Justin was finishing his warm-up tosses. The catcher threw the ball down to second, and the Giants whipped it around the infield. When Justin got the ball back, he rubbed it up a little, looking at Michael the whole time. "Guess they don't have any age requirements about coaching third, though, huh?" he said. He tried to smile, but looked more to Michael like a mean dog baring his teeth. Michael didn't say a word. He didn't look away, stared right back at him. No change of expression. But he didn't say a word. You weren't supposed to when you weren't really in the game. And he wasn't in the game. No matter how many signs he gave. Even if he helped the Clippers win that one time. He was just the closest spectator to the game. And both he and Justin knew it. If he said anything back to him, it was no better than somebody yelling at a player from the stands. Kel was batting leadoff. He struck out on 3 pitches. Then, Maria grounded weakly to second. Manny up now. Justin's first pitch to him was right at his head, missing the bill of Manny's batting helmet by maybe an inch. Manny dove backward, out of the way. His bat somehow came flying down the third base line toward Michael. He ended up flat on his back, helmet in the grass behind him, Manny's body half in the batter's box and half out. Only one person on the field said anything. "Oops," Justin said. He rubbed his hand on the side of his pants. "Darn thing must have slipped," he said. The home plate umpire took off his mask and knelt down next to Manny, as Mr. M came running in from the first base coach's box shouting, "That was on purpose!" The umpire helped Manny sit up, then looked at Mr. M. "In retaliation for what exactly?" Mr. M said, "Their kid thought my kid threw a ball at him during warm-ups." "Juan," the umpire said to Mr. M, "I can't start warning both teams for something that happened when I was still stuck in traffic on the George Washington Bridge. But he threw at his head." Justin's dad was with Justin on the mound. "The pitch just got away from my son is all," he said. "Sure it did," Mr. M said. Justin's dad put his arms out, shrugged, and said, "Don't you just hate it when boys act like boys?" and then walked back to his bench. Michael handed Manny his bat after he cleaned himself off. Manny stood between third and home and stared at Justin. Justin walked off the mound a couple of steps and stared right back at him. "Enough," the umpire said. "I mean it." Michael was worried that Manny might still say something, or even charge Justin, and get himself thrown out of the game. Instead, he was just Manny.
"Tell me," he said, leaning close to Michael so only he could hear, "what sort of score did the Russian judge give me for my tumbling move?"
Michael couldn't help himself. Despite the tension all around him, he laughed out loud.
Justin said, "What's so stinking funny?"
They ignored him. Manny dug back in at the plate and struck out on 3 straight fastballs. Michael thought Justin might have hit 80 with either one of the last 2, trying to throw a hole through the catcher's mitt. The Giants came right back at Anthony in the top of the second and got 2 more runs, making it 5-0. When Mr. M went out to the mound again, those 2 runs in and just 1 out, Michael looked past them all the way to Yankee Stadium, which all of a sudden seemed as far away as Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
"We gotta get to this guy," Manny said when he came off the field after the top of the second.
Manny was with Michael on the bench. The Giants catcher had been on base when Anthony got the 3rd out, so there was a slight delay while he put his gear back on. Michael decided to stay on the bench rather than go out to his coaching box and have Justin dog him a little more.
"What did I do to become this guy's enemy?" Michael kept asking himself.
Become a better pitcher than him? Wasn't anybody in his league allowed to do that?
"Hello," Manny said. "Did we lose radio contact there?"
"I'm sorry," Michael said.
"What were you saying?"
Michael would never admit it to Manny, but sometimes he was just like background noise, like a game you had on and weren't really listening to while you did something else.
"We gotta get to this guy, that's what I was saying."
"I heard that part."
"Well, then I said the same thing in a different way, how it was time to knock some of the stinking apples out of this guy's tree, just to emphasize my point."
"One of your signature moves," Michael said.
"Very funny," Manny said. "Do you have any suggestions about old Justin?"
Michael said, "Our hitters could start by being a little more patient."
"Right," Manny said. "We're already down 5 runs to a guy pitching like you. We've got 5 ups left to make that up, or Justin the complete jerk goes to the stadium and we go home. And you want us to be patient?"
"Pretty much." He ran out to his spot along the 3rd base line then, and stood there, helpless as Chris Norris struck out. Tommy Growney rolled one back to Justin for an easy 2nd out, and Nate Collins struck out looking. With 1 out, the Giants loaded the bases in the top of the 3rd against Anthony. Mr. M had seen enough and replaced him with Chris Norris.
"All hands on deck now," he said.
"Except for one," Michael said, holding up his left hand.
"Yeah," Mr. M said. "Ain't that the truth?"
Norris got a strikeout. 2 outs. But Justin was at the plate. Michael almost couldn't watch. He did what he did sometimes during a big moment in a Yankee game. Almost closed his eyes, keeping them open just enough to see, as if he were watching through a slit in some closed blinds. On the 1st pitch, Justin, going the other way with an outside pitch, hit a screamer toward 1st base, the ball off the bat sounding just as loud as when he'd hit his home run in the 1st. Michael opened his eyes all the way now so he could see the ball going into the right field corner and clearing the bases, and Anthony Fierro got it! He'd just swapped positions with Norris and hadn't even come over to get his 1st baseman's mitt. Didn't matter. From where he was, playing back and off the line because Justin was a right-handed hitter, he dove toward the line, somehow knocked the ball down, ended up on his belly, part of him in fair territory, part of him in foul. At 1st, he couldn't find the ball. Michael was sure Justin, coming hard down the line, was going to get there before Anthony could get up. Except here came Chris Norse, running even harder from the pitcher's mound, covering first base the way you were supposed to, but the way most pitchers hardly ever did in Little League. Anthony managed to get to his knees, underhanding the ball to Norse in the same motion. Norse hit the bag as Justin tried one of those head-first dives coaches told you never to try at first. The field ump, running over from the middle of the infield, had a great look at the base.
"Out!" he said.
Justin, the front of his uniform covered with dirt, jumped straight up in the air, hands grabbing for his batting helmet, taking it off his head like he planned to slam dunk the sucker. Michael thought, "Do it," because it would have meant an automatic ejection. "Do it."
"Don't do it!"
Justin's dad had come running from his spot in the third base coach's box. His voice froze Justin in mid-motion. Then Justin's dad said what everybody watching the game was thinking in that moment.
"It's not worth it! We've already got them beat!"
Like he was slapping everybody on the Clippers right across the face. Michael looked at Justin, wondering if he even listened to his father. Only Justin wasn't looking at his father now. He was looking past him, more toward home plate, helmet still over his head, holding it like it was some kind of trophy. The Clippers infielders, suddenly frozen themselves, were looking in the same direction. Mr. M was standing to Michael's left, blocking his view. But across the field, Michael could see all the Westchester fans standing now, some of them pointing. Michael got around Mr. M, moved out to the fence in front of the Clippers bench, saw what everybody else saw. The parade of people coming around the screen behind home plate, led by a man on crutches, his ankle in one of those big soft casts. El Grande. His daughter right beside him. Chapter 27. It wasn't just El Grande and Ellie. Carlos was a couple of steps behind, walking with Mr. Gibbs of ACS, and another man Michael didn't recognize, but one who had official person written all over him. All of them walking straight for Michael. Michael knew he couldn't have moved, even if he tried. So he stayed right where he was, just inside the fence, about even with first base. El Grande, moving pretty well on his crutches, Michael thought, as graceful with them as he was on the mound, stopped a few feet in front of Michael, Michael feeling as if he were towering over him the way he had at the blue barrier outside Yankee Stadium.
"So," El Grande said, "you are the one who has been making my daughter so miserable lately."
He took his time with miserable, breaking the word up into three pieces. Michael looked at Ellie and said, "I didn't mean to." She smiled that smile at him. "I know," she said. Then Michael looked at his brother.
"Carlos, I don't understand."
Carlos smiled.
"Let them tell you. Show you, he means," El Grande said. "Give it to him," he said to his daughter.
From behind her back, she produced the envelope, handed it to Michael.
"I believe you have been looking for this," she said.
"Open it, Miguel," Carlos said.
Michael did. At the top of the thick piece of paper were these words in bold black type: Cuban Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Underneath was this: Certificate of Birth. And underneath that was his name, Michael Victor Arroyo, and the date of his birth, and at the bottom was the signature that he knew was his father's. Michael looked at Ellie.
"This, it's real?"
"It's real," she said. The man Michael didn't recognize stepped forward now, put out his hand. Michael shook it.
"Son," he said, "my name is Steve Kane. I'm the chief executive officer of Little League Baseball in Williamsport, Pennsylvania."
Michael said, "Nice to meet you, sir." I just want to tell you I'm sorry I didn't know about your predicament sooner, Mr. Kane said. We want our best players on the field, not the sidelines.
Mr. Kane gave a quick look over his shoulder in the general direction of the Giants' bench and Justin's dad.
Especially when they are the age they say they are, Michael said.
I still don't understand.
Then,
how?
The adults looked at one another, like each one was waiting for the other to say something. It was Ellie who did the talking for all of them.
I don't have time to tell you the whole story now, but basically, my father gave me your note. That same day, I got a call from Manny. He told me everything.
It was nothing, really, Manny said.
Michael turned around. Manny was right behind him, of course, had his back, just like always. Michael looked down at the birth certificate again. It was shaking in his hand, like a leaf in a strong wind. He looked up at El Grande.
You did this, sir?
Let's just say I still know some people in Havana, he said.
Who knows some people? Mr. Kane said. Long story short, Mr. Gibbs said. Here we are. Now, El Grande said to Michael, are you going to be standing here talking all night or are you going to warm up?
Michael didn't even have his spikes with him. Carlos pulled them out of the bag he was holding.
Got him right here, little brother, he said.
He handed Michael the spikes. Michael handed him the birth certificate. As Justin's dad came running over saying,
now just wait a second here.
Michael was sitting on the ground next to Manny, trying to get his hands to stop shaking long enough to tie the stupid laces on his spikes. Justin's dad was on the other side of the fence, the field side, and seemed to be talking to them as a group. El Grande, Mr. Kane, Mr. Gibbs, Mr. Minaya, too.
You can't just send that kid into the middle of the game, Justin's dad said.
Mr. Kane was the one smiling now.
Oh, sure I can, he said.
He stared at Justin's dad for what felt like an hour and then said,
you're the one who did this to this boy? It wasn't just me. You wrote the letter, Mr. Kane said, didn't you? I was just trying to make sure the rules were enforced.
His face was redder now than even a Little League baseball game seemed to make it.
I didn't want us to get into another Danny Almonte situation. Big of you, Mr. Kane said.
Michael thought the head of Little League was looking at Justin's dad like something he just noticed on the bottom of his shoe. Michael said to Manny,
by the way, you got her phone number and you didn't tell me?
I didn't want to spoil the movie, he said.
Manny stood up then, pulled Michael up with him.
Now shut up and pitch, he said.
By the time Michael had warmed up, there were two outs in the bottom of the third, nobody on for the Clippers. Bobby Cameron was due up.
Listen, Mr. M was saying to the players he'd gathered around him behind the bench. Somebody's gonna have to come out for Michael to go in. Any volunteers?
Every member of the Clippers raised a hand, except for one, Manny. He shrugged at Michael.
You need me, he said.
I need a batter here, the ump said.
Nobody on the Clippers moved, all those arms still in the air, willing to give up their spot for Michael.
Well, that narrows it down, Mr. M said.
Bobby Cameron said,
let him go in for me, coach, right here.
He looked at Michael and said,
Mike already got me my swing.
He put out a fist, and Michael tapped it with his own.
Mr. M said, you bring your bat, Arroyo?
Always,
Michael said. He wanted to run to the plate to get his hacks off Justin, but he made himself walk instead, like he had all day. Digging in, he remembered what Justin had done to Manny with two out and nobody on in the first, and reminded himself to stay loose. Don't forget you're facing a loose cannon, he thought. Somehow, Justin still had that smirk face going for him, like he was telling everybody that his attitude about this game wasn't going to change just because Michael was in it. Michael took a fastball for strike one. Then two balls, the second one inside and tight, backing Michael off the plate.
He's trying to set me up,
Michael thought. He was. Justin tried to throw Michael his very best fastball now, his number one, daring Michael, just off the bench, to catch up with it. But Michael was ready. Michael was on it. He made sure not to overswing, like he was making Justin's power work for him. The pitch was a little bit toward the outside corner, and Michael went with it all the way, lacing it up the alley between the center fielder and left fielder. By the time the ball made its way back to the infield, Michael was on third with a stand-up triple. When Kel singled cleanly to center, Michael could have walked home. Kel got thrown out stealing to end the inning. No matter. They were on the board. Top of the fourth. Michael stood on the mound, ball in his left hand again, rolling it around in his palm like it was his lucky charm as the Giants' second baseman dug in to face him. Not feeling anything like the season might be over in a few innings. Feeling like it was just getting started. Manny put down one finger. Michael went into his windup, his El Grande motion, burned in strike one, the Giants' second baseman taking all the way. Yeah. He overthrew the next two pitches, like he wanted to throw both of them 180. One of them nearly went over Manny's head, but then he came back to strike the kid out. Struck out the side, finally. As he sprinted off the mound, he saw Ellie jump up from her seat in the first row of the stands. Then he couldn't help himself. He looked at El Grande to see if he'd gotten any reaction out of him. The great man was slowly nodding in approval. Oh, yeah. Whether Justin was shaken now that Michael was in the game, or whether the Clippers had rediscovered their confidence, they got two more runs off Justin in the bottom of the fourth. He walked both Manny and Anthony with one out, and then Chris Norris doubled them both home.
I'm telling you, we're in his head now, Manny said after the inning, still out of breath.
Then he grinned at Michael.
And boy, is there a lot of room up there!
Michael, overthrowing again, too excited now that the Clips were back in the game, walked the leadoff man to start the Giants' fifth. The next guy, their right fielder, tried to sneak a bunt toward third that was half-sacrifice bunt and half trying to bunt for a base hit. Manny didn't even think about yelling first base, which would have been telling Michael to go for the shore out. Just watched as Michael bare-handed the ball over by the line, planted, and threw a perfect strike to Kel covering second. When Kel brought the ball back to him at the mound, he took his hand out of his glove, flexed it a couple of times, said, "Okay, that hurt." "Sorry," Michael said.
"We're cool,"
Kel said. "We're gonna win this sucker, right?"
"Sounds like a plan," Michael said.
Two more strikeouts to end the inning. When they all got to the bench, Manny gathered everybody around him, the way Mr. M had when he asked for a volunteer to sit out when Michael went into the game.
"Let's win this right here," he said.
Kel said, "Sounds like a plan."
"Right here, right now,"
Maria said. It started with a Nate Collins single to left. Now Zach Frazier, bunting on his own, tried to put one down the first base line. Justin was all over it, the way Michael had just been. Maybe that play was still in his head. Maybe he wanted to show he could get the guy at second the way Michael just had. Only he rushed the throw, and the ball sailed over the shortstop's head and into center field. And if the center fielder hadn't been backing the play up, the way you're supposed to, the Clippers would have gotten back to within 5-4 right there. Justin paced around on the mound talking to himself in a too loud voice like he was broadcasting himself over a PA system.
"You jerk!" he yelled.
Manny poked Michael, who was on his way to the on-deck circle.
"Finally, he gets it,"
Manny said. Second and third, nobody out. Michael coming to bat. Justin's dad called time and came out to the mound. Justin finally lowered his voice, but Michael could see the two of them arguing, not able to decide who looked angrier, or whose head looked more likely to explode. The only thing Michael heard before the umpire broke up the father-son chat was this. I know how to pitch. Really, somebody else must have put those guys on base. Whatever, Dad. Michael stood there at the plate, taking it all in, waiting for them to finish. Michael hated all the little rituals big league batters had when they got ready to hit, ones that he saw guys in little league imitating all the time. When Manny did it, he wanted to laugh, just because he knew it was for show, because so much of Manny was show. But Michael wanted to groan when he'd see guys playing with their batting gloves and putting out a hand to the umpire, like telling him to wait while they dug in. Then, adjusting their helmets one last time, like they were football running backs about to carry the ball into the line. For one thing, he didn't even wear batting gloves. He thought the coolest guys in the big leagues were the few who still didn't. But he wanted to make Justin wait, see if he could rattle him just a minute more. So he bent down, picked up some dirt, rubbed it in his hands, then re-gripped his bat. Then, he took his stance. Not looking at Justin until the last possible moment, at which point he felt like he was watching a cartoon and could actually see smoke coming out of his ears. Justin was that mad. Ball one wasn't even close to being a strike. Way outside. Ball two was up in Michael's eyes. Michael took a deep breath. Practice what you preach now, Michael told himself. Patience. Then it was completely quiet for him. That place he got to on the mound where he couldn't hear a thing. Just him and the ball. Justin rocked into his motion. The next sound Michael or anybody else heard in McCombs Dam Park was the ping of his TPX bat making contact with the ball. He pulled a line drive over the first baseman's head, the kid not even having time to get his glove up. Until the ball was past him and rolling toward the right field corner. By the time their right fielder picked it up, Nate had scored easily. The right fielder made a good relay throw, and the second baseman made a nice throw to the plate, but they had no shot at getting Zach. Clippers 5, Giants 5. Still nobody out. Michael took third on the throw to the plate. When he got there, he looked over at Ellie. She gave him the kind of underhanded first pump Tiger Woods was famous for. Michael just nodded. Poppy always said, "Act like you've done it before." Justin, his control still shaky, walked Kel on 5 pitches, but to his credit, he gathered himself then and struck out Maria, Kel stealing second on strike 3. Michael was still on third. The game was still tied. Manny up. Michael had to put a hand over his mouth because he didn't want anybody to see him smiling at a time like this. But he couldn't help it as he watched his friend go through all his little routines, tightening the Velcro on both his batting gloves, taking his helmet off as he wiped what Michael was pretty sure was imaginary sweat off his forehead, looking over to the Clipper stands as he did, then over at the Giants bench, finally at Justin the Jerk. Michael watched all this and knew exactly what he was thinking. And what he was thinking was that he was in heaven. It was all about him now, and he was playing the scene for all it was worth, like he was his Uncle Timo. He got his bat back and gave one quick look toward third. Not to Mr. M, not looking for any kind of sign. At Michael. Manny winked. Then he lined the first pitch he saw from Justin up the middle so hard, it nearly took Justin's head off. Clippers 6, Giants 5. 3 outs away, Manny said after Anthony lined out to short to end the inning. The game's still at 6-5. Shut up and catch, Michael said as Manny finished putting his catcher's gear on. Bobby Cameron had offered to warm up Michael, but he said he'd wait. When Manny had to, he could get his shin guards, chest protector, and mask back on so fast you felt like you were watching one of those NASCAR pit stops. Manny ignored Michael, nodding at the stadium across the way instead. 3 outs, and we are there, he said. Manny, Michael said, we've had a deal all summer about talking about
that. So when I say shut up, I mean shut up.
Manny said,
I was just saying.
Don't be saying anything, Michael said. About how many outs, about anything. The baseball gods you're always telling me about, they're hanging on every word right now.
You're always stifling me,
Manny said, popping up off the bench, ready to go.
I wish, Michael said. Michael ran out to the mound, held up four fingers to Manny. Four pitches, all he would need to get warm. When he was finished, Manny threw down to Kel at second. Michael watched his teammates throw the ball around the infield and thought, 3 innings ago, I was done for the season, and now... Nah, he wasn't even going to think about how close they were. Just pitch, he told himself. The Giants were at the bottom of their order. Mr. M had showed him in the scorebook as if Michael required some kind of written proof. Number 8 hitter, number 9 leadoff man. It meant they would have to get two guys on for Justin to even get another at-bat. The first batter was their right fielder, a short kid with long curly hair coming out of the back of his helmet. With two strikes, it was almost as if he closed his eyes on Michael's fastball, somehow getting a bat on it, a slow roller past the mound, right at Maria. She had more time than she thought to make a play, but tried to barehand the ball instead of gloving it. She dropped it on the first try, panicked when she finally picked it up, threw wildly past Anthony Fierro. The ball rolled to the fence behind him. Runner on second. Ninth batter now. Their second baseman, Michael's height, which meant tall for a second baseman in Little League. Big swing, Michael remembered. They must have had him in the ninth spot to give them some pop at the bottom of the order. He'd hit a shot earlier in the game off Anthony that Nate had made a great running catch on. It didn't stop Mr. M from yelling, Number 9 hitter! From the bench. Michael loved Mr. M, but he always hated when coaches did that. And they did it all the time in Little League, because it was usually their way of saying, this guy can't hit. Every time one of them did it, Michael couldn't help himself. He found himself looking at the batter's face, knowing how bad it made the kid feel. Justin's dad had the big guy square to bunt. Maybe figuring his best chance to tie the game was to get the runner on second over to third, even if he had to sacrifice an out to do it. The kid bunted the first pitch, but much too hard, between Maria and Anthony. Maria started for it, so did Anthony. Then both of them stopped at the same moment, thinking the other was going to get it. By the time Maria picked it up, it had died in the infield grass short of the dirt, and everybody was safe. First and third, nobody out. Michael never showed anybody up on the field, ever, no matter how badly they'd messed up. But he was hot now, really hot. They were so close. He walked off the mound toward second base, trying to look calm, rubbed the ball up hard, took a deep breath. Corazón, he said to himself in a soft voice. Heart. Then turned back around to see Manny walking toward the mound. Even though Manny knew how much Michael hated conferences on the mound, but it was too late to stop him now. When Manny got to Michael, he said, I've got a plan, case you're interested.
Shoot.
Nah, he said, we can't shoot Maria, she's too cute.
Jokes?
Michael said.
Even now?
Strike one, strike two, strike three. That's my plan, he said to Michael, handing him the ball. He threw strike one, high heat. The kid on first stole second, Manny not even risking a throwdown. Michael didn't sweat it, though. He could see the leadoff man had no shot at his fastball. Strike three, he knew when he released it, was the hardest pitch he'd thrown all night. Manny stepped out in front of the plate, checked the runners, zipped the ball back to Michael, and said,
8-0, case you're interested.
Michael didn't have to be told. He threw three more, pretty much like that one, past the next hitter. Two outs now. Justin coming to the plate. Like Manny had told him in the apartment this morning, this was the way things were supposed to work out. Michael looked around. Everybody in the bleachers behind the Clippers bench was standing. Ellie, the quiet girl, the shy girl,
put two fingers in her mouth and let out a whistle that was louder than a crossing guard's. It made him put his glove in front of his face and smile. He almost felt like laughing. That's how happy the sight of her made him feel. Even knowing there was still work to be done, one more out to get. Michael was where he was supposed to be, finally. It was him against Justin, and maybe him against all the other people who didn't want him to be here, or across the street ever, or even in Williamsport. Michael knew the game wasn't over yet, knew enough about sports to know that getting Justin out was no sure thing. He'd already seen how fast things could go wrong earlier in the inning. But he was fine with all of it, because this was the way it was supposed to be, the way it was always supposed to be. His best against the other guys. He checked the runners, even though he knew they weren't going anywhere. Then he blew strike one past Justin, who was so late with his swing Michael thought he was trying to get a head start on strike two. Manny didn't come out of his crouch, just got it back to Michael fast, the way Michael liked when he was going good. And he was going good now. He let it rip. Strike two. One strike away. He thought for maybe 1 second about wasting the next one, getting Justin to chase it. But why wait? He'd waited long enough. All he'd been doing for a long time was waiting for things to happen to him. Only now, the ball was back in his hand. He allowed himself a quick look over to the stands again, looking at El Grande this time. Michael saw him nod. He took a deep breath, went into his windup, kicked his right leg toward the sky, and one last time let the ball fly. Pure heat. Ball game over. They were going to the stadium, but first, here came Manny running toward Michael, helmet gone, mask on, as happy as Michael had ever seen him as he jumped into Michael's arms, nearly knocking him over. Then the rest of the Clippers came running from all corners of Macomb's Dam Park, and Ellie was out there with them, and Carlos. And just for one moment, Michael closed his eyes like he was taking a picture of it all. This wasn't his whole dream, but he had to admit, it would sure do for now. Chapter 28. He stood outside the stadium at 5 in the afternoon, the way he had so many other times, only this wasn't all those other times. Today, Michael was going inside. Manny and Ellie were with him. So was El Grande, who had stayed behind when the Yankees went on their West Coast trip so he could continue to rehab his ankle. No blue barriers today, Michael noticed, because anybody who showed up could go inside for free and watch the Clippers play Fordham Road in the District 22 Finals. Carlos was on his way from Manhattan with Mr. Gibbs. Mr. Gibbs, who had turned out to be another one of their heroes, who the day after the Westchester South game had come to the apartment at 825 Girard with Mrs. Cora and told them he knew about Poppy. Told them that Mrs. Cora had gotten his phone number the day after Carlos had been picked up for scalping, and how he had come to her apartment, and she had told him the whole story, told him she was worried for the first time that things might not work out all right for her boys. Mrs. C. had begged Mr. Gibbs to give her temporary custody until Carlos turned 18 in late September. But Gibbs had a better idea. He said he would start the paperwork that would give him temporary custody, knowing that the way things worked in what he called Red Tape City, Carlos would turn 18 by the time the paperwork ever made it out of ACS. But there was one condition. Carlos had to become an intern in the ACS's Bronx office and work as Mr. Gibbs' assistant until he turned 18 at the end of September. And, Mr. Gibbs said, if he wanted to stay on the job after that, he could. That day in the apartment, Mr. Gibbs had said to them, "You boys have quite an angel in Mrs. Cora. I hope you know that." She put out her arms then and took Michael and Carlos into them with room to spare and said, "I told you about angels." Carlos and Mr. Gibbs said they would pick up Mrs. Cora on their way to the ballpark,
since she had informed them that she had no intention of missing a night like this for her baseball boy. And now, that boy was about to enter the stuff of his dreams. El Grande was off his crutches by now, but still in a soft cast. Just to be on the safe side, he said. He'd replaced the crutches with what Michael thought was a pretty fancy cane, which he used now to tap Michael on his shoulder, like he was knighting him in one of the Knights of the Round Table stories Michael loved when he was little.
It's much better inside, he said. The Yankee Stadium.
He always called it that. The Yankee Stadium. Are you ready? Ellie said. Manny, of course, answered for both of them.
Are you kidding? He said. We were born ready.
Ellie went through the turnstiles first, blowing a kiss at the man who worked the player's entrance for Yankee games. Michael went next, then Manny. Then El Grande, already telling his daughter to slow down so that her injured daddy could keep up. Ellie led them through a doorway on their right, down some stairs, taking the steps two at a time. Michael thinking, she looks as comfortable here as she would in her own house. When they were all at the bottom of the stairs and through another doorway, Ellie pointed at the ground.
Check this out, she said.
On the cement floor was a blue line that shot out to their right, a red line going off in the opposite direction.
The blue takes you to the Yankees, she said. The red to the other team's clubhouse.
El Grande said to Michael and Manny, follow the blue. Tonight, you dress where the Yankees dress.
Manny smiled, put his hands together, looked up.
Okay, Lord, you can take me now.
Before you even play the game? Ellie said.
Well, Manny said, you make a good point.
Manny looked heavenward again and said,
check you later.
They followed the blue, followed Ellie in her white long-sleeved shirt and rose-colored jeans, Michael and Manny nearly having to run to keep up with her. El Grande had given up trying to tell her to slow down. Ellie led them down a long, narrow corridor, pointing out what she said was the media dining room on her left, all of them still following the bright blue line. Manny whispered to Michael,
you think this is what Alice in Wonderland felt like?
Michael said, I was thinking over the rainbow myself. They came into an open area. Ellie hooked a thumb at the door to her right.
Back entrance to the manager's office, she said. Right, Manny said. I knew that.
They took another right. There was a door in front of them with a plaque on it that said, Pete Sheehy Memorial Clubhouse. Michael said,
who is Pete Sheehy?
From behind them, they could hear the click, click, click of El Grande's cane on the cement floor as he caught up with them.
Mr. Pete Sheehy, he said, is a clubhouse man who they say was going all the way back to the great Babe Ruth himself.
I have read a lot about the Yankees, Michael said. I guess I must have missed him.
El Grande said, he is just one of the many, many ghosts here.
He smiled.
It is one of the first things they tell you about the Yankee Stadium. About its ghosts.
You think they'll be here for a Little League game? Manny said.
Not just here, El Grande said. But smiling.
Then he opened the door to the Yankee clubhouse. He showed them his locker right around the corner from the manager's office. His locker having some kind of plaster replica of the top of the stadium on it, the way they all did. El Grande walked them across the thickest rug Michael had ever seen in his life or felt underneath his feet and showed them the trainer's room. And opposite that, the player's lounge with its huge television screen and soft-looking sofas and even a couple of recliner chairs that would have probably gotten Poppy more excited than anything in the place.
This place, the Yankee Stadium. Only players allowed in here, El Grande said.
That mean us? Manny said.
Tonight it does, El Grande said.
They went back into the main clubhouse. Michael noticed some gear he knew belonged to some of the Clippers in front of the lockers across from El Grande's,
he recognized Maria's bag and Anthony's, Kel's. All Michael had with him was his bat bag and a small gym bag with his spikes in it. He said to El Grande, "Which locker should I use?"
"Mine," he was told.
When he'd put on his spikes, in record time, Ellie said,
"You guys ready to see the field?"
"Oh, yeah," Manny said.
They walked back through the door to the Pete Sheehy Memorial Clubhouse. Across the way was the runway leading to the Yankee dugout, Ellie said. Above the entrance was a sign that read this way: "I want to thank the good Lord for making me a Yankee. Joe DiMaggio." El Grande put a hand on his daughter's shoulder and said in her ear,
"Let Michael go first."
Michael took a deep breath, like he did sometimes before he delivered the next pitch. Then he walked down the runway and up the dugout steps, and the next thing he saw was all the blue of Yankee Stadium, and grass, an ocean of green grass, greener than anything he had ever seen in his life. He saw the temporary fences they had put up in the outfield for tonight's game, and the way they'd moved up home plate, putting a little league screen behind it. Saw how they'd reshaped the field so that the Clippers and Fordham Road could use the regular infield, just putting the bases closer together. And how they'd cut down the regular pitcher's mound to make it conform to little league standards. Nobody cared. It was still Yankee Stadium. Like a field within the field.
"Don't worry about my mound," El Grande had said in the clubhouse, telling him about the changes in the field. "The groundskeepers will build it back tomorrow as good as new."
Michael saw all the outfield signs he had only seen on television, saw the retired numbers out behind the left field wall, and saw the place next to that, Monument Park, that he had only seen in pictures, where they had the monuments for people like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle. Maria and Anthony and Kel had stopped playing catch off to his right and were watching Michael now as he looked around the stadium.
"It's so big," he said to El Grande.
Best he could do.
El Grande smiled and said,
"I said the same thing the first time."
Suddenly, Manny just flopped down on his back, started flapping his arms like he was trying to make a snow angel in the green grass of Yankee Stadium.
"Oh, yeah,"
he said, even louder and with more feeling than before. Ellie said to Michael,
"He's crazy. You know that, right?"
Michael dropped his bat bag and just pointed to left field, then center, then right.
"This is crazy," he said.
Pretty soon, the rest of the Clippers had shown up. He saw people beginning to take their seats, filling up the ground-level seats behind home plate first, then spreading out all the way down the first and third baselines. When Michael began to loosen up with Manny, he saw Mr. Gibbs and Carlos helping Mrs. C down the stairs behind the plate. She waved at Michael with her green purse. He waved back. Almost game time now. Michael heard them testing the public address system, the one he had only ever heard from outside. He heard the famous voice of the Yankees PA announcer welcoming everybody to the District 22 finals, then asking them to rise for the national anthem. When the anthem was over, the announcer introduced the players and coaches from both teams. Fordham Road first, lining up along the third base line the way the players did on opening day, or before playoff games in the big leagues. Then it was the Clippers' turn.
"Batting second for the Clippers and pitching," the famous voice said, "number 33, Michael Arroyo."
Manny's name was called next. He ran out and stood next to Michael and said,
"This is the kind of ending I like in the movies."
"This isn't the end of the movie," Michael said. "We've still got a game to play." Manny said,
"Oh, baby!"
Anthony was introduced then Chris Norris, then Tommy Growney. After Tommy ran past them and slapped them both five, Michael tapped Manny on the shoulder. Manny turned around, still smiling, just because he hadn't stopped since they'd gotten inside. Hey, man, Michael said, feeling his voice start to crack as he did.
Yeah, dude?
Thanks for everything.
Shut up, Manny said.
The Clippers were the home team, so they took the field first. The PA announcer introduced the Yankee owner, who Mr. M had told them was going to throw out the first pitch. When the owner, bigger in person than Michael had imagined him, the way everything seemed to be bigger inside here, got to the temporary mound, Michael handed him the ball.
El Grande told me about everything that's happened to you, son, the owner said. He looked as stern to Michael as he did when he was being interviewed on TV. But then he smiled. I just want you to know, we expect to see a lot more of you from now on.
Yes, sir, Michael said.
Best he could do. The owner threw a strike to Manny, waved to everybody, and jogged off the field. Michael took his warm-ups. When he was done, Manny threw down to Kel. The Clippers threw it around. Business as usual.
Yeah, right.
The umpire yelled, Play ball! Michael turned his back to the plate, rubbing the brand new game ball up. As he did so, he saw a subway train, a number 4 probably, rumble by, past the opening in right center Michael had only ever seen from River Avenue. The sound of the train was much quieter in here. He thought of all the ghosts El Grande had talked about now, the ones who were supposed to be smiling tonight as they watched him, knowing those ghosts had been joined by one more tonight. His father. Heard his father saying, Now you're pitching. Michael turned back around. The Fordham Road leadoff man was already in the batter's box, the bat held high. Michael went into his windup and threw strike 1. Now, the cheer from inside Yankee Stadium was for him. This is Paolo Andino. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Heat by Mike Lupica. This program was produced and directed by Paul Rubin. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2006 by Mike Lupica. Production copyright 2006, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment. It's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to help ensure a lifelong love of literature for the children you care about. Check your local retailer for the wide selection of audiobooks available from Listening Library. Or if you would like to visit us online for more information, check our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you, and happy listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.